The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Rice, only on Chai FM.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Booker, tough Kathy. Good, thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Can we talk about a story that we've actually meant to be talking, that we've wanted to talk about for a few days? And a fourth Hezbollah tunnel under the border with Israel has been discovered by the Israeli Defense Force as part of Operation Northern Shield. Anthony, do the tunnels that have been discovered present a threat to Israel? Is this an immediate threat to Israel?
Well, according to what the IDF is telling us, these tunnels do not present an immediate threat to residents in the north or indeed to anybody in Israel. And what's been happening is that as these tunnels have been discovered, the IDF has been filling them with explosives ahead of destroying them. So they're actually not going about destroying them at the moment, but instead they've been filling them with explosives so that they can't be used at all by Hezbollah. The IDF is saying quite clearly that the tunnels that they've discovered, at least, don't present any sort of threat to residents in Israel. I think what's quite interesting is that the latest reports suggest that Hezbollah are actually trying to block up the tunnels now from their side of the border. Some of these tunnels that have been discovered have shown clear signs of some recent work on the part of Hezbollah to try and block them up. And I'm not quite sure whether Hezbollah think that by trying to block up the tunnels that they may somehow prevent the IDF from discovering them, or whether they may prevent the IDF from destroying them. I'm not sure. Clearly, none of that's going to happen. The IDF have been using the latest technology, robots, and all kinds of cameras in order to get a very good understanding of how these tunnels have been constructed, what's involved. And in fact, there was a CNN film crew that was given access to one of the tunnels. They were allowed to drop a camera several meters into this tunnel in order to see what was going on there. And what the CNN film crew found was that the tunnel was large enough, and I quote, large enough for an NBA player to stand in. Wow. So it wasn't simply just well-constructed and good enough for an average person, but it's got a very good height, very, very easily accessible to all people, complete with ventilation shafts, complete with lighting, complete with infrastructure reinforcements, concrete reinforced walls. So this has clearly been a huge construction project. And this is going to be an ongoing task for the IDF as part of Operation Northern Shield to really discover all the tunnels that have been constructed. I don't think that we've seen the end of this yet. Four tunnels, I think, is only just really the start of what will ultimately be discovered. As I've said before, this is all about really getting to not only to discover the tunnels and not only to destroy the tunnels in order to prevent them from being any sort of threat to Israel, but also to learn a lot about Hezbollah's operational activities. And I think that therein lies the real secret, the bit that we're not being told much about, that we're starting to understand a lot more about what Hezbollah are up to, about what their strategies are for trying to attack Israel, about their construction capabilities. I think that this is really a huge learning exercise for the IDF and for Israel, for the security organizations. And I think that this is going to be a fairly long, arduous process of discovering these tunnels and neutralizing them, but also learning a great deal about Hezbollah. And I think that the real moment is going to come when Israel decides whether destroying the tunnels on the Israeli side of the border is going to be sufficient, or whether a further activity to try to destroy the Lebanese side of these tunnels might be necessary. And I think that UNIFIL are going to have to play some sort of a role where that's concerned. That moment, I don't think, is near for now, but ultimately that moment is going to come. So that's going to be an interesting time to observe.
Anthony, have the IDF disclosed where the entrance and exits to the tunnels are? I mean, entrance to a tunnel, what does it look like? I mean, do you have to go down underground, obviously, at some point? How do they even find them?
So obviously there's two sides to the tunnel, where it comes out in Israel and right, where it goes down in Lebanon. And right, at the moment they're focusing very much on the Israeli side and where it's accessed. I'm not sure exactly how these tunnels have come out, or indeed even if they have come out on the Israeli side. And, you know, I think in a sense that that becomes less important, because once the tunnel is already under the border and once the tunnel already has access to Israeli territory, I'm guessing that the idea of then boring upward in order to get an exit point from the tunnel becomes much less of an issue, because you already have the access. So it's not clear exactly if these tunnels have had exits constructed into them on the Israeli side and where those exits have come out. What the IDF has been saying is that they have notified the local authorities that might be ruling over the area, that might have jurisdiction over the area where the tunnels have traversed, and they've notified those local authorities about the existence of these tunnels. More than that has not really been said, and as much as there is information and there is video footage that's being released about the tunnels, I think that we can take it for granted that there's more information that has not been released than that has been released. So I think that the IDF is just feeding us enough to keep us feeling as if though we've got all the information that we need, but obviously there's a lot more information that hasn't been revealed at all.
All right, Anthony, a poll conducted in the West Bank and Gaza has revealed that Hamas would win an election in both areas if one was conducted today. So firstly, who did the poll? Because when one looks at Brexit, no poll actually predicted a Brexit, and no poll predicted the election of Donald Trump either. So let's just establish what kind of poll it was. Do you know?
Well, we can also mention that no election is likely to be held in the West Bank or Gaza anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's 14 years, right?
Which is also another relevant point.
Right.
The poll was actually conducted by somebody who's regarded as a fairly prominent pollster in that part of the world, someone by the name of Khalil Shikaki. And he apparently did this poll where he interviewed 1,200 people in the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip, and maintains that the results of the poll have something like a 3% margin of error. That is the official kind of disclaimer, or the official wording that goes around this particular poll. But I think it is an interesting poll to indicate a trend rather than to predict absolute numbers, because, I mean, absolute numbers are advertised, particularly when they talk about the fact that 49% of those people who were polled claimed that they would vote for Ismail Haniyeh, who is the leader of Hamas in the West Bank. He's the leader of Hamas in Gaza, obviously. But these 49% relate to people in the West Bank, that they would vote for Hamas rather than Fatah in the West Bank, whereas only 42% indicated that they would vote for Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah party. Now, whether those numbers can be believed, I very much doubt it. And if you add 3% here or there, then it becomes a much, much closer affair than is indicated by these results. But I think it does show a trend which says that Fatah is not a foregone conclusion in the West Bank, as we had have seen in previous times, and particularly at a time when the last election was held, whenever that was, even though we all recall that there was an election that was held that was actually voided because Hamas came in stronger than Fatah in the West Bank. So what we're seeing here is that it's not only Fatah that has any power in the West Bank, that Hamas are tremendously strong in terms of overall support in the West Bank. And we shouldn't forget that, because we always associate Hamas with Gaza. And of course, the Palestinian Authority ruled by Fatah in the West Bank. But, you know, one thing that is absolutely clear from this poll is that Hamas has a huge following in the West Bank. And interestingly, the reason that's being attributed to the current feeling about Hamas in the West Bank relates to the last conflict that Israel had in Gaza, where we all remember that there was a sudden upturn in hostilities, and as quickly as it began, it suddenly ended. But it seems as if that particular conflict has given Hamas a stronger following in the West Bank than had been the case before. We know, of course, that Fatah and Hamas are very much rivals. Not only has Fatah tried to take over the running of the West Bank of Gaza when it was considered that Hamas were really incapable of continuing to rule Gaza, now we're seeing, in fact, that where the Palestinian street is concerned, Hamas is really the organization that Palestinians are following. And that indicates a real concern for us, because obviously Hamas has come out very strongly trying to call for the destruction of Israel and trying to actually physically go about destroying Israel, whereas Fatah has been more cooperative through the Palestinian Authority, and the Palestinians are supporting conflict over cooperation. That's what this poll is telling me.
Very interesting. Anthony, just this morning I read, I just want to move on because I don't want to run out of time with you. Just this morning I read a headline on Israel National News that according to the EU, the peace plan not based on a two-state solution will fail. And that was a statement that eight member states of the European Union made to Donald Trump. France, the Netherlands, Poland, Sweden, the UK, Belgium, Germany and Italy. They've said that this deal of the century that Donald Trump is coming up with has to be based on a two-state solution. Whereas, interestingly enough, he has said it will be whatever the people of those of these areas need it to be. These areas being Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank. Talk about a three-state solution or alternatives to a two-state solution, because as you said yesterday, two-state solution concept came from Oslo. Oslo's dead.
Well, I mean, or maybe a one-state solution, because that's also, you know, something that has certainly been raised.
What does that mean, Anthony? What does a one-state solution look like?
Well, a one-state solution effectively says that all of Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank comes under one single government.
Yeah.
And all of the people, the Jews, the Muslims, the Arabs, the Christians, whoever lives there, all vote for one government. And the majority rules in democracy. So to the extent that an Arab government might be elected due to the fact that the majority decides that that's what they want, that government will rule over the entire area. That's what a one-state solution says. If it happens to be a Jewish government, then it's a Jewish government that rules over the entire area. Now, what I can say to you is that, you know, there's been lots of scaremongering about demographical issues within Israel. And if we count up the numbers, then we can see that Jews still have a majority, even if you add in Gaza and the West Bank and, you know, all of the Arabs around the area. So if there was a one-state solution, I would suggest that we would still have a Jewish government ruling over that one-state solution. The problem is that the Jewish government really has no desire to rule over the Arab population. The Jewish government has no desire to rule over Gaza. The Jewish government has no desire to rule over Arabs living in the West Bank. So I don't see a one-state solution as being an alternative, unless, of course, it is being advocated by people who wish the Arabs to rule over this area and effectively for the Jews to be eradicated. So, you know, that would be the alternative once the demographics, if the demographics shift in such a way that a single government would be an Arab government ruling over this area. The conclusion to that we're all reaching is that the Arab government would not support Jews living in this area, and that would effectively be the end of the Jewish state as we know it. And if the demographics do not shift in favor of an Arab government and remain with the Jewish side, which is the case at the moment, the Jewish government really has no desire to rule over the Arabs who live in this part of the world.
And
we would like them.
Right. And many people, many Arabs.
We would like them to have their own ways of reaching, you know, what they wish to do. And, you know, we've had experience been ruling over Gaza before, and it's been pretty tough. It's not something that we would wish to do. Those are not people who are representative of who we are, and they deserve to have their own self-determination rather than have a Jewish government rule over them.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. Anthony, I'm just watching the time. And all right, tomorrow can we talk about other alternatives as well?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the three-state solution, which we didn't quite get to today,
yes.
Or any other alternatives, what they might be. And again, you know, I'm encouraging everybody to write in and let us have your views, questions, whatever you'd like. Let's keep this discussion going.
Fantastic. Anthony Reich, thank you. Always a pleasure to speak to you. And thank you for your time and expertise and insight. God bless. Bye-bye. That's Anthony Reich. He's our Israel correspondent here on The Morning Mayhem. We speak to him Monday to Thursday at 7:45. If you want to check out what else he has to say, go to his blog. It's called Comments from the Edge.